Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Circle Sanctuary Network Podcasts, brought to you by Circle Sanctuary, one of the oldest nature spirituality churches in the United States, connecting people of nature-centered paths around the world. Join us through the week for a variety of shows discussing various topics, celebrating the divine in all of its forms through nature worship, rituals, education, and building bridges of community. Welcome to Circle Talk, presented by Circle Sanctuary to connect pagans of all paths. Tonight, in this encore presentation from September 2019, Circle Minister Deva Rose was joined by Circle Ministers David Sassman and Kern Greenman to discuss the aspect of dualism in religious history and within paganism, as well as discussing its impact on understanding the divine, mythology, ritual, magical practice, and identity.
Welcome to our show. My name is Deva Rose, and I'm your host on Circle Talk. Circle Talk is now one of the shows featured on the new Circle Sanctuary Network podcast, or CSNP. The Circle Sanctuary Network podcast team have put together a lineup of shows rotating throughout the month. Mondays feature Lunatic Mondays with host Laura Gonzalez, alternating weeks in English and Spanish. It can't be Tuesday without Circle Talk, and I will continue to be the host for this fun show on the first and third Tuesdays of each month. Wednesdays feature a new show, Divining Dreams with Selena Fox. Are you in the mood for some magic? Then you'll want to tune in on Thursdays for Moon Magic with Jeanette and David Ewing. It's such a fun and informative lineup of shows, and I hope you try them all. Tonight on Circle Talk, we're featuring guests whom I have known for many years and am very lucky to call friends. Reverend Dave Sassman and Reverend Kern Greenman are Circle Sanctuary ministers, and they're going to discuss their workshop that they presented at PSG this year on duality and paganism and beyond. Let's hear a little bit about them. Reverend Dave Sassman is a distinguished member of the Indiana pagan community with experience in military and pagan ministry. David is an ordained Circle Sanctuary minister, and I was lucky enough to have him as a mentor when I went to the minister training program. Dave has been the founder of a pagan festival, the director of PEN, Pagan Educational Network, and is known for his royal warrior blessing rituals, which he leads with his wife at PSG and other pagan festivals. Kern Greenman is an ordained Circle Sanctuary minister and a board-certified chaplain working at a hospital in Indiana. He has a Master's of Divinity degree and has been a professional hospital chaplain for 20 years. Kern is the first openly pagan chaplain to belong to the Association of Professional Chaplains. He is a former priest of the Thalia Coven of Indianapolis, which was founded by the founders of the Pagan Pride Project International. Kern plays guitar and Native American flute and is half of the music duo, The Green Men and the Muse, with his wife, Anon. He's also produced a CD of his music, which I highly recommend. He also has a love for languages, enjoys reading harmonic hymns and classic Greek. Welcome, Kern and Dave.
Well, thank you. Good to be here.
Hey. Now, how long have we known each other? I was thinking about it. You two have known each other for about, what, 20 years?
About that.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. And we've probably known each other, what, maybe 10? 8 to 10?
Closer to 14, I think.
Oh, my gosh. I'm getting old. Oh, yeah, because I was in the minister training program forever, and you were my mentor, and that was like 3 or 4 years ago. So you're right. That's been a long time flies when you're having fun.
I think we met at PSG when it was still at Wisteria.
Yes, we did. Oh, wow, that has been.
Yeah, it was about 2006 or 7, around then.
Oh, wow.
Well,
yeah, it's been a while.
It's been a while.
There you go. Oh, my gosh, that's so fun. Well, so I'm very excited, and thank you very much for agreeing to be in here tonight. People get a taste of the workshops we present, and then they want to come to PSG, which we want everybody to come and be with us. And so I was very excited about this workshop. So the title of it is Duality and Paganism Beyond. Tell us a little bit about what the workshop is about and how you came up with it.
Okay, well, the workshop, Mrs. Kern, we talked about the aspect of duality, not only within paganism, but also in religious history, and the impact of duality on the understanding of the divine, mythology, ritual, magical practice, and our identity. And we also explore in a discussion in our workshop how duality empowers us and or limits us, and how we might move beyond it into maybe pluralistic thinking as well.
Oh, all right. What is this something that you just have been interested in, or did something give you an idea for this workshop?
Well, it was Dave's idea.
Oh, there you go, Dave.
Well, Kern and I had been talking about it in a roundabout fashion for a number of years, and we decided that we would look into the possibility of having a workshop at PSG, and lo and behold, it happened.
There you go. All right.
Well, Dave had lent me a copy of an essay collection called Versus Duality and Conflict in Magic and Mythology and Paganism, edited by Kim Huggins, and was published by Avalonia Books, just a few years ago. And he was very excited about it, and I was very intrigued as well. So originally it was Dave's idea for this.
All right. So explain to me for our listeners, so that we all kind of have the same definition, what you mean by duality.
Well, duality comes from the Latin word duo, which means two. And duality means like two things. And the term dualism generally means like thinking in twos, and that is found a long time tradition in religious thinking, and that's the main definition we're going with. There's different kinds of duality. There's like a
I was gonna
ethical,
say, is it always gender?
Well, there's
I
gender,
was
sure.
Gender duality, in as far as like. You know, the God and goddess, although not everybody looks at that divine concept in that way. What other kinds of duality are there?
Well, there's ethical duality thinking. It's like us versus them is a very typical way of ethically thinking about dualism. Plato wrote about, in the story about the cave, he wrote about the idea of mind and the physical world and the duality of that. In modern philosophy, there's like objective and subjective ways of looking. There's a dichotomy in that. And even in like particle physics, there's a duality in photons. They're both a particle and a wave at the same time. So, this has gone way beyond religion, and duality is found in lots of different things in our world, lots of different kinds of thinking.
So how did the idea of duality start? And you say Plato, is that about the time that people start looking at and noticing, like, patterns?
Well, we had a very good discussion in our workshop. People had lots of different ideas because it goes back before Plato, before history. It's during the prehistory. So it's not really known when people started thinking in twos. Some of the theories are that, the human body has two eyes, two ears, two hands, two feet.
Mm-hmm.
So we have these bilateral bodies, left and right. So we began thinking bilaterally, dualistically.
I never thought of that, but that's true. We're kind of composed of duality.
Yeah, we have one nose.
There you go.
Two nostrils.
But to an nostril, well, exactly.
There you go. I can tell it was his idea for the workshop. There you go.
He blew his nose, and it all came out. Yeah. Other ways it might have started was, just people thinking me and you kind of thinking, or my tribe versus their tribe. The feminist scholars, they have a theory that it began with duality began with the patriarchy, with men suppressing women during the rise of agriculture and civilization. And so when some cultures began viewing women as differently, as chattel, for rearing their children, there was like men versus woman type of thing, and men needed to be dominant. And that was a strong dualism pretty early on as we developed agriculture. So another theory go ahead. I'm sorry. I don't mean to interrupt you.
Oh, no. Go ahead. No, I was going to say, is it typically an equal thing, or is there usually a hierarchy, like one dominating the other, or can it be both?
It comes in all forms. There could be equality. There could be the idea of one dominating the other, or one loving one and hating the other. And it's very strange. It's like for the dominating of women, Western culture, had a duality in the way they saw women. They put her on a pedestal and yet put her down below their feet.
Right. So the whore Madonna syndrome.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Yeah. Well, go ahead. What's your
Oh, and one other interesting thinking that came up in our discussion at PSG this past summer was one theory is that dualistic thinking started when hominids developed the ability to hear their own thoughts. And they were like, well, where's these other thoughts coming from? That's just a theory, of course, and all these are theories because it started out before history was started to be written down. And we don't really know for sure because dualism has been around a long, long time.
So tell me, and we talked about you see this in many faiths, and you see this as a religious aspect in many faiths.
In a lot of the major religions that came out of the Axial Age during the 8th to 3rd centuries BCE, there was Zoroastrianism that developed a strong Ahura Mazda versus the Angra Mainya, where there was the good god and the bad god. This had, even though Zoroastrianism was never the largest religion in the world, it certainly had an impact on a lot of other religions, particularly Judaism and Christianity later.
Right. There's a theory, absolutely.
And there was another, like Taoism had a duality, but it was a little bit different. It had the yin and the yang, and that developed in the 4th century before the Common Era. And basically, it's the first principle of Taoism talks about the interconnectedness of these two opposing forces that compose of the whole Tao. So that was, that whole Eastern way of thinking, Eastern culture, had a big impact on us not understanding the East when the world started coming more into contact with each other. And I also talked about Plato and the mind-body duality, and this grew with Neoplatonism about the Greeks had a saying that soma sema, the body is a tomb. So the body was looked at as horrible and corrupt, and thought, and the mind was looked at as pure, and it got to be pretty extreme to where people either said, well, my body, I'll do whatever I want with it, it's corrupting, or they just became very strict and ascetic and would try to punish their bodies. And that developed also into the early first century of Christianity and Judaism. Just before Christianity came, there was this escapism kind of duality. There was like a future utopian world that God was going to usher in and punish all the evil that was in the world. And Christians took this on, like in the book of Revelation and in the Gospels, as and that's still with us today, this apocalyptic kind of Christianity.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So tell me how duality, how do you see it in paganism, especially Wicca?
Well, Dave, I think you can you had a real good talk on that in the workshop, if you want to go ahead with that. Oh,
that
don't laugh. You did.
That was in June. It's a process, not an answer. And by that, we're all trying to figure out how all this, not only how it works, but also how it happens, so that we can understand it.
Right.
Trying to come at things from two different perspectives is often confusing and damaging and frightening. So we have to try and focus in on one perspective at a time, and make a judgment call about how all this stuff affects us personally, on a spiritual and moral and ethical level.
So yeah, like in paganism, and when we get into thinking about dualities, especially like with Wicca, with the emphasis of the male and the female,
right?
You know, the rites are led by this male-female partnership, and initiations and elevations are conducted by women leading men and men leading women, and this alternation of male and female occurring through the whole praxis of Gardnerian Wicca and other Wicca, we're coming into an age nowadays where we realize, well, not everybody fits into one category of either male or female, and not everybody is heterosexual, and not everybody is either heterosexual or homosexual. There's a lot of variations in between and maybe beyond. So I think we're in a very exciting time in paganism, although it's challenging for us, because we're looking at well, it's exciting because there's different possibilities and different ways of looking at who we are and what our rituals mean, if we're willing to expand beyond the dualism. And yet it's also frightening because we're challenging ideas that have been around for quite a while, since the beginning of Wicca and within our culture for a long time. So so that's part of the challenge as well as the exciting part of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would think that is a challenge. As someone who has been in a tradition that has very specific gender roles. And again, it's even within our tradition, you're right, as you have people who have all male groups or all male covens or all female covens, and how do you adjust and how do you grow and what you do so that basically you can still be true to your tradition, but you include everyone. So I do think that we're in an age where we're looking at everything. I'm not one that thinks we should throw the baby out with the bathwater, but that we're looking at everything. And then you're right, people are making decisions and actually trying things. We had an incident at a group years ago where, and traditionally we led male and female for circles, and somebody was ill and they couldn't participate. And so typically you would get someone else, but this person chose to lead the ritual by themselves. And I thought it was wonderful. I didn't have a problem. But for some people, they, you know, they really had a problem with it. Some people said it felt, you know, it felt different. And so you're right. I do think as a tradition, as a faith, that we're going to have to try new things and see how they feel, but yet honor those traditions if they work for people, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it sure does. And it applies to, you know, all of our theology and Wicca and in paganism. But in particular Wicca, we tend to see things as either or sometimes. Like when we talk about the charge of the goddess, Dave would love to do a workshop just on the charge of the goddess. And it talks about beauty and strength, power and compassion, honor and humility, mirth and reverence. Well, you know, technically beauty and strength don't have to be opposites. But when we approach things as dualistic, we kind of blind ourselves to that.
Yeah, we kind of limit ourselves.
We do. We absolutely do. And there's a lot of this, like the Scourge and the Kiss, the Oak King and the Holly King, winter, summer, fall and spring. Those are actually four different things, at least in our part of the of where we live in the hemisphere. Well, not hemisphere, but in the latitudes. And the thing is, they're not one and two, they're four, you know.
Right.
So, and even life and death, we see that as opposites, and yet life and death and rebirth is a cycle, a circle.
Right. So what, in your all's discussion, what are some reasons why we are so drawn to duality? Because I have to say myself, I find comfort in that. You know, it's something that's very familiar to me. I work with, again, that's why earth-based spirituality, I was really drawn to it because, you know, being raised in a tradition that only had male energy didn't seem right to me. So, again, I probably embrace a lot of dualistic positions and ways in my own aspects of my own private practice.
And I think that's good because, you know, it's making sense to you and it's working for you. The problem is when we get stuck in it or we exclude other people because they don't fit our categories.
Right.
Dave, you were going to say something?
Yeah, and we've all been around folks who came from a monotheistic faith, and when they realized the balance that paganism and Wicca often has, the healing starts, and they begin they start to blossom and open up. And each of us are remembering those moments when it confirms, yep, we're doing it right.
Yeah.
You know, because sometimes even in our own faith practices, there are questions. But when those blossoming individuals come into our realm of experience, that's an acknowledgement of, yep, you know, we're doing everything, we're doing things right, maybe not everything right, but we're doing things right, and it works for us and it works for them, and the balance is there. where with some of the other folks, it's one, you know, it's only one guy.
Yeah, and it's funny, you're absolutely right, Dave. I realize I was probably drawn to this, I was drawn to this path because of the duality aspect and not the monotheistic aspect. So that is kind of interesting. Although many scholars will tell you, Jewish and Christian, that I know that for them the divine has no gender, but I will tell you growing up, it didn't feel like that. It felt like very masculine energy for me.
But it may have no gender. However, it's personified as having a gender.
Mm-hmm.
It's presented as having a gender.
Right.
Yeah. The pronouns
I also
are all
think
male.
That. Yeah, I also think that it's just easier to think in ones or twos.
Mm-hmm.
Once you start getting into threes, that's can be a little more difficult to think that way.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
once you get there, it starts really making sense. I think in paganism, the druids have really impressed me on how they're able to think in threes. As
tell us
like
about
this,
that.
Well, like the sun, moon, and stars, the earth, sea, and sky,
mm-hmm.
upper, middle, lower, mind, body, spirit,
mm-hmm.
They divide like art, science, religion,
mm-hmm.
past, present, future. There's a lot of these druidic trichotomous three ways of looking at things that seems really so wholesome and I don't know. It's very enlightening, I think.
Yeah.
So that is one contribution I think Druidy could – I'm not a Druid, but I find that that could really benefit the rest of paganism.
Do you think with all the role changes and gender fluidity and things that we're looking more toward threes and kind of leaving the aspect of duality in some ways?
Well, I'm not sure where we're going to end up with it all.
Yeah.
You know, I know like, oh, go ahead.
No, I was just thinking of, I think it's Selena who, when she talks about divine, she says, you know, you believe in one or many or neither. So it's kind of like, yeah, it's kind of a, you know, three. So it just made me think of that.
Yeah, she has an interesting way of seeing the directions. She is able to perceive nine directions,
mm-hmm.
you know, the four directions plus inner and outer and
mm-hmm.
up and down and
mm-hmm.
I can't remember them all.
And center. Center.
And center,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is community for her. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, and I also think like the hard polytheists might have something to teach us too, as far as them being able to see lots of different gods and maybe
mm-hmm.
picking one, you know, everyone gets to pick one if they want, or actually the deity picks you, probably it's more
deity
accurate.
Picks you.
Yeah.
Deity
so,
picks you.
And when that happens, watch out, boy, I tell you.
Look out.
but yeah, that, you know, that is like going beyond just threes. That is looking at many things.
Yeah.
We did have an interesting discussion in our group at PSG last summer when one of the Asutu folks was there. And they have, you know, lots of different deities. And there's like a multiverse of nine worlds, I believe. But the person that was there stressed that dualism is also still a very central, important concept. You know, there's the us-them where the warrior gains his worth and honor by defending us against the others out there who seek to harm
right.
them.
Mm-hmm.
And he found that as the dualism as strengthening his
right.
his way of how, who he was and how he understood himself and the world. Although, in the end, other people, you know, saw that as, well, you know, if you keep if you apply that to everything, us versus them, you know, that could lead us to endless war and endless mm-hmm. conflict. And is there a way to look at the whole? And I think Asatru in some teaching does look at the whole. So,
mm-hmm.
So it was an interesting mixture. Yeah, go ahead.
I think that's human nature to kind of, did my thesis on mega churches, the business of God, and it talked about, like, I couldn't imagine going to a church that has 2,000 people. It would be overwhelming for me. But when I interviewed people, they said it wasn't a church of 2,000 people. It was a church of 100 congregations. You know what I mean? 100 people congregations. Because people, I think it's mm-hmm. human nature for us to form these cliques and get, and mm-hmm. it's very easy to get that us and them mentality, especially in times of stress. So, yeah, I do think that's something, I think it's something as ministers that we have to watch for and to help people sometimes get out of that box, because I do think that that's something that people can get into, especially in times of stress and you know, I've seen that happen in our own faith when things again, like gender or traditions or things that are changed, people sometimes have stress over that.
Yeah, I think we see that now in our culture, where, you know, minorities are pictured as the other, even though they're mm-hmm. Americans with us, they're mm-hmm. pictured as the other, and so now we've got a lot of division in our country because of that, it seems.
Absolutely, and it's funny, I was at a dinner party once, and they were telling a story, and I was kind of laughing, and then my friend really started laughing, and she said, you know, it was an us versus them, and she said, you're the them. I'm like, what? but I didn't consider myself like that, so I, like, didn't get it. And I'm like, what? I think the term they used was goat worshippers. It was just word. And I'm like, what?
Ouch.
And I don't think what.
Ouch.
Exactly. So, but again,
wow.
I think we just, human nature, we do that. And I think that's something we need to be aware of. And again, I think people do that, and it's there's comfort in that, you know. So anyway, so yeah, I've had
but the world is changing, and
absolutely,
and I noticed that on our way back from our Wisconsin visit, we stopped a little tiny burg in Illinois to get gas, and
mm-hmm.
I went in to use the restroom, and on the
mm-hmm.
door it was, this is an all-gender restroom,
mm-hmm.
in a little bitty, tiny redneck.
Isn't that
town.
Nice to see?
mm-hmm. I thought,
yeah.
Wow.
Progressive, aren't they?
yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
And you know, and it's something that tells me something that I need to be aware of to do is to share. And why that story is so important, like the gender restroom was a big deal in a group I was in several years ago. And I myself thought, well, you know, I prefer, you know, women or people who identify as women. I don't, you know, it didn't make sense to me until a friend of mine who I was very close to and who I knew was transgender, but that didn't mean anything to me, told her story of basically being attacked in restrooms and, you know, people accusing her of stuff. And so that she got to where when she went out to dinner, she wouldn't drink anything because she didn't have to go to the restroom. And it was at that moment I realized, I don't care who I go to the bathroom next as long as nobody's uncomfortable. Do you know what I mean? So I think
mm-hmm.
sometimes we need to share these stories, because if I don't grow up a certain way or have that experience, I have absolutely no idea how duality
Correct.
May affect you.
Correct.
So, yeah, I think that's why sharing is so important in our culture today.
Yeah, I think one idea we debated was whether dualism is helpful or harmful or both. And we came to some ideas, conclusions, maybe, that dualistic thinking can help us to form categories so that we can think and learn about things, at least
mm-hmm.
initially, until then something comes along that changes our thinking, but we maybe start out dualistically and then grow
mm-hmm.
from there. But dualism can also be used negatively, like we said, to
separate people.
Well, in our country where we have a two-party system, sometimes
mm-hmm.
I'm not sure that's being used in a helpful and, well, I know it's not. It's being used very negatively these days. And you know, in other countries where this has happened, you know, it has ended up causing oppression and even genocide. You know, I was suggesting that perhaps there's like a shadow side to dualism that we need to be aware of. You know, I think, for example, you know, one reason like we fear computers taking over us, over the world, like in a lot of movies like Terminator
mm-hmm.
and The Matrix and so forth, because we know computers are dualistic. Their thought process is based solely on ones and zeros. And
mm-hmm.
we humans, you know, tend not to want to trust them because, you know, we don't want them to make complex ethical decisions for us
right.
because it's not always black and white or however, and especially decisions that would affect us. So yeah, that those kind of movies make us think about that. And I think, you know, we are capable of overcoming this shadow side of dualism, or at least the more negative aspects of dualism.
Mm-hmm.
I think on a personal level, when I'm angry about something, I notice
mm-hmm.
I sometimes start using a lot of words like they and them in my rants.
Right. Us and them, it absolutely, because there's a safety net there. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I think it's stress.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that.
And so when I hear myself saying those things, I become more aware of myself and become more aware of my dualistic thinking, at least the negative dualistic
mm-hmm.
thinking, and I can draw back from that. So, you know, and like you were pointing out, in times of stress,
mm-hmm.
you know, I'm a chaplain in a hospital, and people are under a lot of stress in hospitals when they're sick, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when a lot of the dualistic thinking can kick in. You know, it's us against the nurses or against
mm-hmm.
the doctors or against the other patients or whatever. And as a chaplain, you know, I can suggest, well, you know, is there a third way of thinking rather than this or that, you know?
Yeah. I will play devil's advocate. Sometimes it's funny. I notice in times of stress or sickness, my family will do that. It's us against the world. But there's a comfort and there's a sense of belonging. Do you know what I mean? And so for me, us and them is not always a negative thing. It's the a belonging, and you're stronger as many than you are as one. Does that make sense?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm just talking about the negative aspect of that, the negative aspects that can come out of that. There are positive, like you said, definitely. Go ahead, Dave.
And when it's us and them, it's always more comfortable to be us, to be included
Absolutely.
In us.
Until you become one of them.
Become one of them. Right.
Those goat worshippers.
Absolutely. And that can happen in your own family, believe me. I've been there. Absolutely. There you go.
Another way we can move beyond the negative aspects of dualism is in our ritual planning, of course, try going beyond the dualisms every now and then and think about the diversity that's in your audience and the diversity of the world and the diversity of the different deities there are. So, that can help us to grow and become more inclusive when we apply it to our ritual planning.
That's interesting, and it brings up another topic for another show. We had a discussion at a group I was in, cultural appropriation, you know, the difference mm-hmm. between cultural appropriation and cultural appreciation is something else that, again, is very prevalent. And absolutely, as you plan ritual and you reach out and you, you know, do you have a right to call certain deities that you, you know, you ethically don't work, you know, are familiar with, and so yeah, it's just interesting. It's we live in a time of questioning. You know, we've left Pisces, and so it's funny. We're now in a time of questioning everything.
Yeah, definitely, and that can be kind of scary, but it's also fascinating too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, opens the doors to new things.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, but anyway, I was going to also say another idea we brought to help moving beyond the shadow side of dualism is,
mm-hmm.
and there's many ways of saying this, and a person can adapt it to their own tradition, but simply remember that your enemies are also children of the divine.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, yeah, I don't always think that way, and sometimes mm-hmm. to even it that way is like, no.
mm-hmm.
You know, they're not children of the goddess. I'm a child of the
mm-hmm.
goddess.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so that doesn't mean we don't have differences or we don't, don't need to hash out those differences or fight for something that's right or true. But it can make us a little humbler to realize we're all, you know, we all spring out of this planet Earth and
mm-hmm.
we all share this one planet. And
mm-hmm.
so, we all depend on that divine force. And so, even
and
though
sometimes
we break things in two, in dualism, the oneness is still there.
Right. And you have to remember the old story of the good angel and the bad angel on opposite shoulders. You know,
mm-hmm.
you
I only had bad
that,
angels on my shoulder.
Only bad angels? But you have to remember that pause, that realization that they are also children of the divine, that pause that gives you an opportunity to reflect upon where you're at that moment so you can shift one way or the other and make yourself a better person. As opposed to saying, it's always them, it's their fault, you see.
Yeah.
Yeah, another idea that challenged us in the workshop is one of the people there was a pagan Buddhist, and he said that Buddhists believe in the duality of the self. They recognize that we have this duality of the self against the rest of the world, but that is false. And so overcoming that dualism is an important spiritual goal, and at least it was, he talked about in his past. And I had never thought in those terms before. That was very enlightening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And in fact, I can't really think in those terms. That would really be hard for me to do. I would really have to work at that.
Yeah, because especially in America, the self, you know, is so important.
Right.
You know, we're so individualistic minded, But to overcome that, I think, is a bigger challenge for us. But there is a truth to that, the self is something we've created in our own mind about
mm-hmm.
ourselves mm-hmm. and to differentiate ourselves from everything else. And we are more interconnected than we even want to think about.
Mm-hmm. So what did you learn during your workshop from other people? Did you have lively discussions? Were you surprised by the thoughts that people had about this?
I was surprised by
the passion that people would have about this subject.
But we were also surprised by the number of people that showed up.
Mm-hmm.
Who had a sincere desire to learn about the topic. That was amazing to me.
I really didn't think anybody would show up, and I was kind of secretly hoping that so I could go to another workshop.
You do have a following. Stop it. Anyway, was it a PLI workshop?
Something like that. No, we didn't teach it. Yeah, but there were other. The one I was wanting to go to was, but yeah.
I was going to say yours probably should have been. That's really cool.
But we were surprised the number of folks that showed up and the different opinions. A lot of diversity there.
Yeah.
At least in theological opinion.
Yeah.
Religiously,
To Buddhist, to Wiccan, to general pagan, to not sure what
that's
they
the
were.
Truth.
Mm-hmm.
And people were, because you all are wonderful workshop leaders, people were comfortable and were and shared freely.
Yeah,
that was probably the best part of it, was that we could throw out questions and people would just start talking. And then we could sit there and learn as the facilitators.
Absolutely.
Yeah. PSG workshops are great. I mean, I look forward to the music at PSG and the rituals, but I also look forward to the workshops because I always learn something new. And there are how many workshops at PSG? There are dozens.
Over 200.
Yeah.
It's just amazing.
You can't go to them all.
Besides your – no, and for people who aren't, and it's funny, I kind of say PSG is like which college. It's very different. The level of classes you get are just excellent. But typically in any time period, they usually have workshops Monday through Saturday, and they're usually from 1 to 3 and then like 3 to 5 or something similar like that. And then Selena has a workshop from like 5 to 6:45.
But the quality
or excellence, there's usually like what, 6 to 10 different options each workshop time.
And they're an hour and a half long.
And they're excellent.
And it's amazing. If you can find something in that you're going to enjoy going to, then you're going to have to present your own workshop.
And like you said, I've met a lot of different people, and I have to tell you, and sometimes I think the goddess taps me on the shoulder, like I stumbled in a workshop that I wasn't planning on going to. We were at a new site, and I got lost, and just geographically, and it's funny, my partner didn't have any problem, but I couldn't figure things out. And so I ended up at a workshop that I would not have picked and ended up being excellent. So, again, I just think, you know, sometimes if you don't really know what you want to do, just go to one and keep an open mind, because if nothing else, I have met so many people. And if you get to workshop early, people would just talk and share. And I have met so many people who are brave, I find, and go to PSG by themselves and say that they never feel lonely. They meet so many new people.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And you mentioned PLI workshops. PLI stands for Pagan Leadership Institute.
Mm-hmm.
And those are classes that are designated for if someone wants to go into some type of leadership in the pagan world. They are, they can be from everything from chaplaincy to worship leading. And then Selena has her own special track alongside that every
right.
day she has a workshop. So there are the basic normal workshops, and there's like the 101 type of workshops, but then there's the very
right.
in-depth ones.
Right. And I will tell you, I do a mix. When we were in the minister training program, you basically only went to very intellectual, heavy workshops, and sometimes I just want to have fun. So anyway, so I have to say, now that nobody's making me do nothing, I go to a workshop. I will just go to some fun workshops. There's a lot of tarot workshops, aromatherapy, people who talk about pagan parenting. I mean, just all kinds of workshops. They had a whole track this year, Florence, who's a newly ordained minister, did on children ministry and did children. In fact, I think, Kern, don't you usually play guitar at one of their classes?
She's invited me to do that a few times, yeah.
Yeah, it's just a really wonderful array of educational choices. What were we going to say, Dave?
I forgot.
Well, it'll come back to you.
I forgot.
Anyway, but both of you all give excellent workshops, so it's really, really fun. And then they usually have, besides you two superstars, they usually have headliners. And Jason Mankey was there this year. The Witch of Oz was there this year, and she's actually going to be on this podcast October. The first
Ooh,
Wednesday
cool.
in October. Let me see what that date is. Yes, we're going to be, let me see when she's going to be here. She's going to be here October 1st, and we're going to try something new. She's going to be calling in from Australia. So
Ooh,
that will either be a great show or I'll be chattering for a half an hour. I have to say PSG is it's a really wonderful wonderful experience. So what's it like presenting? Is it fun? Is it you're presenters. Yeah, I mean, I think
there's a lot of fear.
There's fear, and there's a lot of work. These workshops aren't something you can just decide to throw up. They make you send an outline in. I mean, you have to do, I learned preparing for an hour-and-a-half workshop is a lot of work because you don't know. You may get a group that doesn't say a word. And, again, you're talking for an hour and a half. But, again, I have led some workshops. And again, everybody's been, like you say, people are really excited to learn and to share, which is really, really nice. So.
Yeah, I like leading workshops where I can facilitate discussion, maybe more than lecture. And some workshops are good when you've got someone who's very knowledgeable about the topic and they can lecture for an hour and a half and the next thing it's over. I tend to enjoy presenting something where we open it up and I learn as much as they do.
There was one time a lot of years ago when I was just starting to do workshops, a fellow took over the workshop, and I learned more from him than I was ready to teach.
Isn't that funny?
Yes.
Isn't that funny? You know, I have been so fortunate. I've not ever had a heckler. I've not had anybody who was inappropriate. I mean, yeah, I've never had Yeah, anybody. Everybody has been always been delightful and very open to sharing. So, again, and the funniest thing is, and this happened to me, I didn't say it out loud, but, again, I've been in workshops where people come and it's a different workshop, and they're like, it's hot and I'm tired, I'll just sit here, which is kind of funny. That has happened to me numerous times, and I think it's a gift from the divine because it ends up being something that I needed to hear. So, well, I cannot believe our time is almost at a close. Thank you so much. You two were great guests.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
Thank you for having us.
The time flew by. The bad news for you all, it means I'm going to invite you again. But
we like hanging out with you, Deb.
That's the downside for being a wonderful guest. But anyway, well, thank you all so much. And I look forward to talking to both of you soon.
On the weekend.
There you go. And besides Dave and Kern, I'd like to thank David, our sound engineer, for his technical expertise. And finally, I'd like to thank all of you out there, our listeners, for your continued support of all of our shows on the Circle Sanctuary Network podcast, or CSNP. Our next Circle Talk will be Tuesday, September 17th, and the topic will be Pagan Homeland. I look forward to talking with all of you again, so please come back. We'll transition our show with a musical selection. Good night, everyone, and blessed be.
I am pagan, and I'm proud. I am pagan, gonna shout it loud. I am pagan, want the world to know that I follow the goddess, cause she rocks my soul. Don't need your Bible, this life I'm reborn, no Ten Commandments, one fills the bill, and in harm none do what you will. I am pagan, and I'm proud. I am pagan, gonna shout it loud. I am pagan, want the world to know. Your soul.
Come on.
Are you pagan?
I am pagan.
And thank you for joining us on the Circle Sanctuary Network podcasts, presented by Circle Sanctuary and produced for all who follow the Nature Center paths. Join us here throughout the week for various programming connecting the community around the world. And please don't forget to watch for updates on the Circle Sanctuary website at www.circlesanctuary.org. And follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/CSNpodcasts. We can also be found on your favorite podcast hosting sites, such as iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and others. And until next time, many blessings.